All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was a Chief Warrant Officer helicopter type pilot in Vietnam in 1969. I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio in this brand new decade. Holy mackerel. 2020. I didn't think I'd ever make it to this one. I can tell you that for sure. But we've got a really exciting program here for our first program of 2020. We're going to be talking about what's going on over in the Middle East with two people. One is Jack Carr, who is a Navy SEAL, and, of course, our annual preview of the year with Rebecca Grant is going to be on in the second half of the program, so I want you to make sure that you stay tuned for that. I want to also make sure that we don't forget to tell everybody about our sponsors and hope that you will go and frequent their establishments as much as you can. Number one is Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans is a disability-only veteran service company. Legal Help for Veterans, as I say, specializes in veteran disability claims. For more information, you can go to their website. That's legalhelpforveterans.com, or give them a call. It's 800-693-4800. U.S. Wings, the manufacturers of the finest leather jackets in the world, according to Sergeant Hack, who is the owner of U.S. Wings. It is a major supplier of leather flight jackets to the military. For more information, you can go to their website, that's uswings.com, or give them a call, 800-650-0659. I also want to remind you that every 3 months we're going to be giving away one of U.S. Wings leather flight jackets. These are the A2 jackets, the World War II type of jackets, which are now going to be distributed to the Army again. So we're going to be giving those away, so make sure you go to our website, veteransradio.net, and click on the entry form there, and hopefully we'll give away a jacket to you. That's from U.S. Wings. And, of course, I want to make sure that we don't forget our local veteran service organizations, which without their help we couldn't be on the air. That's American Legion Post 46, VFW Post 423, and the Charles S. Kettles VVA Post 310, all of Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is beautiful today with a nice little light coating of snow for all of you out there in Florida. Just want to let you know what you're missing here. The other thing I want to make sure, we've got two events coming up, and I want to make sure I get these. For our listeners out there at KMET in California, you've got a DAV Recruit Military Riverside Veterans Job Fair coming up this Thursday, January 9th, running from 11 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon at the Riverside Municipal Auditorium. This is a free hiring event for veterans, transitioning military personnel, National Guard members, reserve members, and military spouses. The goal of this is to join forces to attract, hire, and retain military veterans and military spouses in the Riverside area. So again, mark your calendar for those of you out there in the KMET land. Thursday, January 9th, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Riverside Municipal Auditorium. And joining me in the studio is one of my very best friends, and he has an event that's coming up also. John Kinziger is probably the veteran that I've ever known in my life. And he started an organization called Warriors and Caregivers United. And Warriors and Caregivers United is a program. Well, I'll actually let him tell you all about it. But he's got a big fundraiser coming up this coming Tuesday here in the Ann Arbor area. So, John Kinziger, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Dale, thank you so very much. Our Warriors and Caregivers United group is a group that was started about 4 years ago. It was my personal effort to affect the suicide rate of veterans here locally. We started out with the Ann Arbor VA mental health PTS guys, and we've grown. We're across the state of Michigan. But Tuesday, January 7th from 5 to 9 at Franchi's, which is next door to the sidetrack, we're having our annual event. We have live music, great food, live auction, a list of many neat things, sports events, Red Wing tickets, etc. That'll be live auctioned off, and that's going to be at 7:15 on Tuesday. The owners of the sidetrack, Linda and Jessica French, will be giving us half of the meal tickets. The staff will be all volunteers, and we will receive all of the tips. What this evening amounts to is raising about half the budget for our organization each year. Our organization, what do? We embrace warriors and caregivers in a non-judgmental, safe, and unassuming environment, bringing families together. What the VA had forgotten were the caregivers are the most important person to be around a PTS warrior. And we started this organization because I saw that as a need, and it's really come along quite well. We're saving warriors, we're saving families, we're bringing children together. Another forgotten element in this whole thing are the children who see their father or their mother who has been to war and come back not the same, that they're with other children who have experienced the same thing. And it's just so great to see all the children playing together when we put on events for the whole family. One of the other unique things we do for the caregivers is we set up spa days where they'll go in large groups of 8, 10, 12 of them in different areas of Michigan where they get together and they have a good time together. They share information. They share experiences. And it seems to really help all of them. I'm very proud of our group. And it's great to have mentors that are Vietnam veterans who be able to talk to these guys who have had that journey for the last 50 years. And they definitely look up to them.
Absolutely, John. I think what you're doing is just a great organization. The concept of the peers being around other people who are going through the similar situations that you are going through is so helpful. I think we all, as Vietnam veterans, we finally discovered that when we did acknowledge that we needed other people and said we can solve our own problems by ourselves.
Amen.
And I think this is something that I've always been impressed with what you're doing here. And I've found that there are other organizations similar to this around the country that I've heard from. Somebody just sent me a book about it, so I'll have to make sure I get you that one, that talks about support for the caregivers especially. And I think we've mentioned this on Veterans Radio before. You know, we never really thought that much about our mom and dad and, you know, people at home. Well, they're fine, you know, and we didn't realize what they were going through. And then, of course, we came home thinking we were normal. And how you define normal is a relative, but we didn't take any of that into consideration ourselves. So I congratulate you on this. Let's talk a little bit more about this because the people in our area, we always get a great turnout. So if you're going to come to this thing, you better make sure that you're there at 5 o'clock.
Yes.
Because you got to eat. And luckily, the Frenchies is two rooms that they've allotted for you to use.
Yes.
And the food is excellent. The camaraderie is great, and the music is great. Tell us a little bit about who the people are that you're going to have there.
Well, Stacy Mason is a former Miss Michigan. She's a professional entertainer out of Detroit, and she'll be there. She's been with us since she's been Miss Michigan, performing for us at the VA hospital or performing in fundraisers for us. She's bringing her keyboard player, and she can sing anything. We'll also have the current Miss Michigan there who will be there to sign autographs and have pictures taken. We'll have the vice president of our organization there. She's coming down from Mount Pleasant. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things with our organization because we came out of the Ann Arbor VA is that our people are all over the Lower Peninsula. So it's necessary for us to have an event in Grand Rapids and follow up one with Sterling Heights or in Mount Pleasant or Ann Arbor. So we're really all over the state. But Tuesday night is a time we come together. People will be able to meet several of our officers, directors. They'll be coming down for the event. And Dale's right. You better get there early because parking can be something else.
It's also you want to make sure that you have a meal there because the sidetrack provides great food.
Oh, yes. And remember, we get half the cost of your meal.
That's amazing. So make sure that you have the fillets and so forth
that
you want to have for dinner on that night. And that you do thank the wait staff because they're donating all their tips for the evening as well.
100% of their tips will come to us, you know, and it's a fine time. The auction's going to be around 7:15. Steve Gross is a local auctioneer. He's going to be doing the auctioning. We have some great things. One of our Vietnam Warriors makes some very nice polished rock pendants that mm-hmm. he wraps in silver wire and all. They're available. We've got a list of things. People, if there's nothing on that list that you would like, I'd invite you to come and see me because it's going to be there.
Anything that you might want that's related to warriors and caregivers will be there. There are tickets, as you mentioned before. Make sure you bring your checkbook or cash or
amen
or money jars or whatever else you've got around here, because this organization is a great local organization, which is what I like so much about it. It is local and local people, and John is out there trying to help everybody that he can.
Dale, I can tell anyone that if you give us a dollar goes to help veterans. I won't deal with an organization that doesn't do that. There's nobody getting paid in our organization. It's a real family affair.
Well, that's great. We look forward, and I'll be seeing you on Tuesday night at what time?
Be there at 5. You won't find a seat.
That's Frenchie's in Depot Town in Ypsilanti, Michigan. If you put in Depot Town into Google, you'll find it, and you'll see all these. I was going to almost say elderly people trying to get in there, but we're not
yes.
elderly yet. But you're going to see a lot of young and older veterans, and their families will be there. So
it's right there at the corner of Cross and River Street in Ypsilanti Depot Town.
There you go. Thanks very much,
see you
John,
there.
For coming over and talking about it. And we will see you on Tuesday. That's January 7th at 5 o'clock. Be there, and I'll see you. You can actually get to see what we look like. I'll see you then.
Great.
All right. Thank you very much, John. And so John's going to be taking off. We're going to take a real quick break. And when we come back, our guest is going to be Jack Clark. And Jack Clark is going to be talking about what's going on in the Middle East right now. He was a special operations team leader, platoon commander, troop commander, all sorts of things. And he's a well-known author. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Jack will be here. So you're listening to Veterans Radio.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and I forgot to give you our phone number. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, the number is 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. Joining me on the program right now is an author, a veteran himself, that I have not had a chance to talk to in the past, but was contacted by someone who knows him, and did my vetting as I always do, and found out that this guy's a real deal, and I'm really excited to talk to him. So, Jack Carr, I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. I sure appreciate it.
Well, it seemed very timely with what's been going on in Iraq and Iran and that whole part of the world, and you seem to have spent a lot of time over there. Tell me a little bit about your background.
Right. So I did spend a little time there, and the way it relates to what's been going on recently is my last assignment there was as a task unit commander in the SEAL teams, and I was responsible for special operations in southern Iraq, so in and around Basra, which was one of the most Iranian-influenced sections of Iraq throughout that drawdown of U.S. forces. So our main mission there during that time was to pressure the enemy threat network, which is a polite way of saying it was to destroy, dismantle IED cells, primarily facilitated by Iran. So when I saw the news this a few days ago and seeing someone that was directly or indirectly responsible for the deaths of friends of mine, it was personal to see that come across the news there.
Well, can you tell me, I mean, what we're talking about here on Veterans Radio is the killing of the General Soleimani, the Iranian general who was seemed to have an awful lot of influence on what was going on in Iraq, now and prior in the past. Can you tell me what that means or what it means
right.
to you?
Yeah, so he was really responsible, and he was targeted not for what he had done in Iraq, which was really facilitating attacks against U.S. forces, primarily bringing EFPs in. If you remember, those are the explosively formed penetrators that could defeat U.S. armor, so just sliced through our armor essentially like butter, and really became, even though they're tactical weapons, they really became weapons of strategic importance because they wore down American support for the effort there, and really became the focus of much of what I did in 2004, 2005, 2006, and then at the end in 2011. But Soleimani was really, I mean, he was an enemy combatant, and he'd been at war with us essentially since 1979. And he was in charge of proxy forces that had international reach, and also was a clear and present danger to U.S. diplomats, soldiers, citizens, and U.S. interests abroad. So he was not just targeted for what he had done to us in Iraq during our time there, but what he was planning on doing in the future. So it was high time that he was removed from the board.
Well, you know, I've been listening to all of the experts out there on both sides, and this is they're politicizing it, which I think is unfortunate. You know, when you find a bad guy out in the open and you have the opportunity to take him out, I think you just take him out. At least from, that's just my opinion.
Well, that would make sense now, wouldn't it? And you know, he was Iran's most influential, popular, capable general. So having him off the table is really a significant blow to the Iranian regime, and they're going to have to think long and hard about their response. They have a few things away. They if they respond in a fashion that's seen as weak, they lose military and political capital in their country and in the region. And if they respond too forcefully, then the Trump administration has really made it clear that they're not interested in regime change. They're not interested in nation building, and they will respond in force. So Iran has some thinking to do over the next few days here.
I would think so. You know, one of the other people I was talking to thought that, you know, this kind of opened up a bee's nest of what, you know, what could be. And of course, everybody is, you know, getting a little panicked about what that could be. But I think I agree with you, Jack, when you're talking about the idea that they have to do some serious thinking as well. How far they want to push against, you know, in this particular administration. I think it's, you know, each administration is different in, you know, in their personalities and so forth. And I think that this one is going to push back a little bit harder than those that have been around in the past.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. No doubt about that. And they've been testing the waters recently as well. They're testing to see if we still are that paper tiger that we may have been or maybe been seen as because of our actions after the 1983 Marine Barracks bombing. We had some harsh rhetoric then, and then we'd left a few months later. So in this case, they've shot down a unarmed UAV. They've been attacking ships in the Strait of Hormuz. They were responsible for an attack on a Saudi oil company, and then they escalated with attacking our coalition bases in Iraq, killing that U.S. contractor, and then attacking the U.S. embassy or facilitating the attack through "quote unquote" protesters. Mm-hmm. So they found out the other night just how far they could push.
Well, I think it's interesting. You know, I don't want to get into the political side of this whole thing, but it's always interesting that this particular administration is, you know, has a tendency to go after some of our intelligence units that are around the world, and here our intelligence unit comes out, finds this guy, you know, getting into his car and says, "Here he is, get him." I hope that they recognize that are you still in the military or have you retired?
Nope, I retired in 2016.
Okay.
I did 20 years and it was time to move on.
I can understand that decision right there. But
that's sufficient, as they say.
Yes, but I think what's so important is to point out that the soldiers, sailors, airmen, and everything else that are over there are professionals. You know, the politics are not part of their thinking, and I'm sure it was the same when you were in the service too. You would talk politics maybe, you know, back in the barracks and so forth, but when you were on a mission, you never even thought about that.
Well, that's right. You focus on the mission, and you know, one of the leadership challenges there is because there are so many inputs these days that weren't out there in World War One, World War Two, Korea, Vietnam. So guys are hearing a lot of things from home, and they're hearing it on all these social channels, on all these websites, on a 24-hour news cycle. So it's something that you do need to address. But the art of leadership is doing it in a way that kind of explains or puts it in perspective, but then gets everybody focused on the task at hand, which is completing the mission.
Completing the mission and then keeping the guy next to you alive.
That's it. That's the real trick.
That is a trick. So what do you think is going to happen next? I mean, do you think Iran is, I mean, there are other influences going on over there as well. I mean, you've got, you know, the Russians are running around and the Turks are, you know, trying to do their thing. And, you know, the Saudis are kind of sitting back waiting for, you know, for us to protect them.
Right. They have a history of that. But Iran has a history of using proxies very effectively. In this case, I would say that they reevaluate how they've done that before and maybe try to muddy the waters even more so than they have been able to in the past, meaning they make it harder to trace back an attack to them, even if we know that it was them, but making it harder for us to lay out a legal case and a legal justification for a reprisal. And I think that's probably what they will be doing going forward, because we have quite the military and intelligence capability these days, and it has only grown exponentially since 9/11. And really, the world hasn't seen what we can unleash since World War II. And I'm not talking about Nagasaki and Hiroshima. I'm talking about the firebombings of Tokyo and Dresden. I don't think there's been anything close to that since that time. So we have that on the table. We have things that weren't on the table back in 1979 and through the 80s and into the 90s with cyber warfare. Mm-hmm. Some things we can do upstream with the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. And we can use proxy forces of our own. So it makes a reprisal non-attributable, meaning there's a lot of dissidents in Iran, and I would be very surprised if we didn't have a few of them on our intelligence payrolls.
I would agree with that one. And you know, plus you've got all the other the coalition that was in Iraq and that, you know, is still loosely around there, that, you know, may want to, if they want to retaliate in some way and it isn't directly against us, but let's say, you know, they go to France or they go to Spain or they go to England and do something terrible there, then you would think that those countries are going to jump on board again.
Right. You would think so. And there is a history of that, of course, throughout the 80s primarily. Mm-hmm. Those countries have a vested interest in keeping Iran in their box or preventing them from striking on European soil.
Kind of going back into your experience, the 20 years that you spent in the service, it seems like, you know, so much of it was going back and forth to Iraq and to Afghanistan. What do you think about that? I mean, I guess just to ask your personal opinion of all those constant deployments.
Right. No, it was quite the experience, and it's tough to look back at it now and, you know, ask those questions like, hey, was it worth it? Was all this worth it? Mm-hmm. Especially when you've lost, especially for the families of people that lost sons and daughters in those countries, for them to ask that question and to answer, you know, was it worth it? Was it my son and daughter's death over there in Iraq or Afghanistan worth it? And that's a tough question to answer. And I think the best way to think of it is that we need to take the lessons that we learned from those countries, tactically, of course, but more so strategically, and apply those lessons going forward. And that is how the people that were lost in Iraq and Afghanistan, how their deaths will not be in vain, is if we take those lessons and we apply them going forward so we don't make the same mistakes again.
I think that's so important, Jack. We're talking to Jack Carr. I want to get a little bit more of your background out to our audience. I understand that you are an author and that you have a few books that you're interested in getting us to read. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
I sure can. So, yeah, that's the two things I wanted to do since I was a little kid were, one, serve my country in uniform as a Navy SEAL specifically, and then, two, write fiction. Because growing up in the 80s, most of the information I got about SEALs came from the pages of fictional thrillers whose protagonists either had backgrounds in CIA type special operations in Vietnam or SEALs in Vietnam, special forces in Vietnam. But those were the 80s protagonist backgrounds, and I wanted to have those backgrounds someday. So I devoured books by guys like David Morrell, Nelson DeMille, Tom Clancy, A.J. Quinnell, J.C. Pollock, these guys who had these amazing protagonists. And then I knew that one day, after I got out of the military, I would attempt to write fiction that like I was enjoying in the 80s growing up. Mm-hmm. And so as I was getting out, I gave it a shot. And I have two books out and one on the way. First one's The Terminal List. Second is True Believer, and then Savage Son hits shelves here in April. So those are the ones that are out there now, and they're political thrillers in the same vein as the authors that I just mentioned. So I couldn't be more excited and feel incredibly fortunate to have made the transition into something I love doing so much. And for anyone that's interested in more information, officialjackcarr.com, they can find me there. And then on the social channels, primarily mm-hmm. Instagram and Twitter, I'm Jack Carr USA.
All right. Well, we'll make sure we'll get you back out here in April. And that gives me the opportunity to read the other books, and then we can have another discussion. How about that?
That sounds wonderful. I sure appreciate it.
All right, Jack. Thank you very much for being on the program, and we will be in touch with you.
Sounds great. Take care, and thanks for all you do.
All right. Thank you. All right. That was Jack Carr, a retired Navy SEAL, talking about a little bit about what's going on in the Middle East. And we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, our guest is going to be Dr. Rebecca Grant. Dr. Grant has been on our program. I went back and looked at least, I don't know, 10, 15 times, but we always have kind of a preview of what we can expect in the coming year, and this time we're going to be talking about what's coming up in 2020. So if you want to talk to Dr. Grant, you can give us a call at 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. We're going to take a real fast break, and then we'll be right back with Dr. Rebecca Grant.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we are back on Veterans Radio, part two of our initial program for 2020. A new decade, a new year, and that means that we have our resident expert on our program, which is Dr. Rebecca Grant, who's the founder of the IRIS Independent Research Corporation that she founded, and they offer expertise across a wide range of subjects, including national security. We'll talk about that. Global military operations, we're going to talk about that. Missile defense, we know that. Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, drones, unmanned operations, aerospace technology, air power, and American political culture. So this is our resident expert, and we want to reintroduce her to the world. So welcome back to Veterans Radio, Dr. Rebecca Grant.
Well, Happy New Year. We're going to have a lot to talk about on the international scene this year, aren't we?
I think so. It's going to be a most interesting year. As they all are. So where would you like to begin?
You know, when you listen to the news, it's hard to believe that we're only 5 days into this new year of 2020 and this new decade, because we have just so many major, major international issues brewing. Of course, I think we're all very focused today on Iran and Iraq, but we could go around the world and we have major developments expected from London, right through China, North Korea, and Afghanistan. You know, all of these are going to have big policy implications for the U.S. and for international security throughout 2020 and beyond.
I agree. So, well, let's go back and we'll go back to Iran, and let's take a look at what you think is going to go on there with the Soleimani being killed.
Well, keep in mind, we seem to have a new development almost every hour, but one really big thing that's happened today is that Iran has now formally said they are done with the 2015 nuclear deal. It's not a surprise, because Iran started deliberate violations of the provisions of that deal back in the summer of 2019. They violated it about six different ways, including producing more uranium than they're supposed to and storing more fissile material. They're using the wrong kind of centrifuges. It was a very complex nuclear deal that was signed in 2015. Of course, the Trump administration gave notice in 2018 that they'd be leaving the deal, and the last little waiver has expired in the spring of 2019, and that's directly what's led us to the crisis that we are in today, following in the aftermath of the attacks on the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. But bigger picture, this is now going to go back to the lap of the U.N., where the Security Council permanent members, plus Germany and the European Union, along with Iran, were the parties to this nuclear deal. So we still have the issue of Iran's nuclear ambitions to deal with. It's really interesting because Iran could have simply abided by the deal, and that would have scored them a lot of points with Europe and with others. But instead, they chose to go down this road of nuclear blackmail starting back in the summer. So that's a really significant factor that will remain alongside now their conventional escalation and anti-American rhetoric and activity.
Right, because I'm looking at one of the headlines that just popped up on the computer. It says, you know, that they will have no limitations in production. Let's see. Iraq. We'll go next door to Iraq. They voted to oust U.S. coalition troops. What's up with that?
Right. The Iraqi parliament. This is interesting. This is sort of a symbolic, non-binding. It's a vote, but it doesn't really have any teeth. The Iraqi parliament had a special session. A bunch of the representatives did not show up, particularly Iraqi Kurds and Sunnis, but a number of the Shia did. And this resolution was voted through. It's not binding, and it calls for looking at getting all foreign troops out of Iraq. So interesting that that includes the NATO mission, which is in Iraq training Iraqi security forces. Canada actually is in charge of that at this moment, and we have several NATO allies that have small force presences there. Germany has some troops in Iraq as well. So it's a little bit of a symbolic move. Of course, what's causing that is the fact that Iraq barely has a functional government. The prime minister resigned about a month ago because of all the protests in Iraq, where Iraqis are protesting lack of basic services and also protesting the role of Iran in Iraq. Prime minister resigned, but he had to stay on as a caretaker because this parliament cannot agree on how to replace him. So major, major political crisis going on in Iraq, and of course, Iran is stirring a lot of that up. So long answer to say, bottom line, the short-term impact of that resolution is zero. The U.S. is not pulling out tonight or leaving a security vacuum there, no question.
I don't know. I can't even keep up with everything that's happening in the world. You've got, the Iran issue going on, and that could escalate, obviously. Depending on who's, I don't even know what the term is, people just start threatening each other. And we just hope that some calmer head, minds might prevail a little bit, at least for a little while, and see what they can work out with that. My next question would be about what's going on in Turkey. We talked about that a couple of months ago, and it doesn't seem to have improved.
We did. Remember when Turkey was the dominant headline? And then, of course, Prime Minister Erdogan of Turkey did visit Washington, D.C. back in November. You might not have noticed because the impeachment inquiry was in full press at that time, and there was really not a lot of attention to Erdogan's visit. The clear problems that center on Turkey's future ambitions and their purchase of Russian military equipment. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I think both President Trump and Secretary of State Pompeo have been pretty clear that the door is still open with Turkey. Now, we're not going to sell them the F-35 fighter and taken some other steps. But the State Department particularly would like to concentrate on the things that are actually working in the U.S.-Turkish relationship and the role of Turkey as an important NATO ally. And Dale, when you take a look at that Middle East map, as we've all been doing in looking at this Iraq-Iran crisis, well, what's that important country that's right up there just to the north of all this going on? Of course, it's Turkey. So we've said over and over again that Turkey remains an important NATO ally, and they really are a linchpin toward the long-term stability of that region.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad to see there's still dialogue with Turkey, especially given this flare-up of crisis with Iraq and Iran.
Well, as you pointed, this flare-up has taken all the attention off of Syria. What's going on there now?
Right, exactly. And, you know, this goes to, one of Soleimani's probably big accomplishments was that he was the point man for supporting Bashar al-Assad in mm-hmm. Syria. When the uprising began in Syria some years ago, you could say that Iran really helped prop up Assad in that initial period. So, you know, let's not forget that Soleimani bears a great deal of responsibility for the bloodshed and the civil war in Syria. Current status in Syria is the U.S. is still working with the Syrian Defense Forces up in that northeastern corner. As we know, the side of Syria over to the west and with Damascus and all that really is under Assad's control.
Mm-hmm.
Russians still have permanent bases there. And Turkey and Syria are working out the security along that border. And everyone is trying to assure that we don't see a regrowth of ISIS in that oil-rich region that was the beginning of their caliphate five mm-hmm. years ago.
Boy.
What are we Americans doing having to pay all this attention to all these foreign countries? It's really something else. But, we have forces in so many of these places, and we have security concerns just all over that region right now.
Well, I think what you mentioned, and Jack Carr also mentioned this, is that Soleimani had a large part in the escalation of what was going on in Iraq, you know, with the various attacks on embassies or, you know, going after ships out in the Gulf and so on and so forth. And you got to, my question, I guess, is maybe you might have an answer is, you know, what was the purpose of trying to escalate the intensity of some of these excursions that they were doing?
Well, Iran has two purposes, really, and Soleimani was absolutely central in carrying that out. He's very close to the Ayatollah and all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
What does Iran want? They want to be the dominant military power in the Middle East. And, you know, they don't get along well with some of the Sunni Arab states, as we know. They also want to keep that clerical Islamic regime in power. And the violence helps them do that. So we know Soleimani helped with the repression inside Iran, and that's what they want. They want to be this dominant power. And the trouble is, they militarily, they're not as strong as the U.S., of course, and our allies. So they really gloried in this unconventional proxy war, which was Soleimani's number one priority, what he did all day long. By striking him and taking him out, a legitimate military target, a major general in a battlefield situation, legitimate mm-hmm. military target, I think this sort of pushes back against their proxy forces. What the goal has been for a long time now is for Iran to stop being the architect of terrorism across that region. Mm-hmm. They have had many chances to be, as Secretary Pompeo always says, a normal nation. And they have a great heritage. They should be a prosperous nation,
mm-hmm.
but they aren't. And, you know, what we see is sort of a double tragedy of their military ambitions and their desire to stay in power with this regime at any price.
Can we extend that to Russia as well? You know, what is Russia trying to do over there? Because, you know, the Russian economy is not very strong either.
Russia is so true. And it was very interesting, Dale. I looked at the Russian Foreign Ministry's official statement after the Soleimani strike, and it started off with the words, "We are very concerned." Well, I'm telling you, you couldn't have asked for a milder statement. I think Russia has really been taken aback by this strike, and possibly China as well. Russia has spent all year egging the Iranians on. Russia and China just did big naval drills with Iran in the Gulf of Oman, which was a really big step for China, which maybe we can talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
But they were happy to let Iran irritate the U.S. and Europe. China buys Iran's oil. Russia has continued trade with Iran. Of course, there's a lot of military trade. Russia sold Iran modernized air defense systems quite recently. But I think Russia has been taken aback by this. This is Russia and China, in the end, they do not want to see the U.S. at war with Iran. That does not satisfy their interests at all. So I think Putin is watching as closely as all the rest of us as to see what Iran's next move might be.
Well, you got to wonder how much influence that they might have on Iran.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you know, we know that Iran and Russia have been frequent diplomatic partners in negotiations in Syria and other matters, and, you know, not really to the good, but I think that they do have some influence. As to Russia itself, well, this is sort of the chapter that Putin wanted, greater influence, and yet it's problematic, too. And Putin has continued inside Russia on his campaign of releasing lots of new missiles. So just at the end of the year, just last week, Russia announced that they had officially deployed a missile called the Avangard. And this is a hypersonic glide vehicle that sits on top of an ICBM. So it reenters the atmosphere. Instead of going straight down on a ballistic trajectory, it can maneuver. Now, we don't know if the missile is reliable or fully tested, but he does claim to have deployed it. And that's a smack back at the U.S. for building missile defenses, and it's a negotiating position as we look to 2021 when a major arms agreement between the U.S. and Russia, the new START nuclear treaty, has to be renewed. So we're already seeing the maneuvering towards nuclear discussions between the U.S. and Russia down the road this year.
I would think so. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and we're talking with Dr. Rebecca Grant about what's going on with our foreign policy around the world. And we're still in the Middle East, and we're talking a little bit about Russia. And when I read that thing about this supersonic, you know, missile thing that goes, I don't even know how fast, 17 times the speed of sound or something like that? It sounded so science fiction. Do you think that it actually exists?
Oh, yes. The question is whether they've really perfected it yet, but they've been working on it for quite a long time, and they've done some testing. So that hypersonic technology is there. Is it full up and reliable? Hard to say, but they're pretty close. Mm-hmm. And as a result, this U.S. defense budget has really increased our funding for research into hypersonics, which we've got some great programs underway, and also into how to counter and defend against hypersonic reentry vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I hope we do. I hope we spend our money wisely on those things especially. I'd hate to go back to the times, you know, when kids were hiding under their desks and so forth. Speaking of American military equipment, what's on the shelf right now that you think is going to, go into operation soon?
Right. Well, our national defense strategy that was set up about 2 years ago really called on the services to think about how to do high-end conflict with Russia and China. The point, of course, Dale, is to deter that conflict, mm-hmm. to prepare for it, and then to deter. So one of the most important things the military is working on, it's a mouthful, like the Pentagon acronyms often are, is called Joint All Domain. The services want to be able to talk to each other across air, land, and sea, and to be able to have maybe an airplane pick up, let's say, an Iranian cruise missile, and have an airplane detect it and maybe a ship fire against it to extend this out in the Pacific as well. So they want to be able to link up their communications and fires much more closely in this digital age. Mm-hmm. Sounds great. It's the right thing. Of course, there's a lot of detail to it, and they're working hard on that. We also are waiting for probably within the next 2 years, the flight of the new B-21 stealth bomber. And I think all the services are working hard to improve their readiness, especially as they gear up for a long-term process of deterrence with China in the Pacific. China still is what they call the pacing threat. And, of course, we have a new branch of the service, the U.S. Space Force.
Yes, we do. Tell me what you know about that.
Well, this one you might have missed as well, but on December 20th of 2019, President Trump signed the National Defense Authorization Act approved by Congress, and he established the United States Space Force as the sixth branch of the military. This had strong bipartisan support from both the House and the Senate. This branch will be a little bit like the Marine Corps is to the Navy. So the U.S. Space Force will be inside the Department of the Air Force.
Okay.
And they have a year when they'll accomplish certain milestones, starting off with a report to Congress on how they're buying satellites. We have a new Space Command headed by General J. Raymond, and they will start migrating over the 26,000 individuals who are now in Air Force Space. They have become, in fact, in United States Space Force. So there is a new service less than a month old. Very exciting.
Wow. That is exciting, especially for people that are in it, I would think. They get to start a whole new, branch of the service on their own to see how that works out. You mentioned, and I think we might want to probably spend a little bit of time in China. So let's head over to China, and let me go to North Korea first, because maybe we can cover that one a little quicker. So he's our notorious premier of North Korea has decided that he's going to start up his weapons things again.
North Korea, no progress there in 2019. You know, mm-hmm. The only good news is that although Kim Jong-un did a number of short-range weapons tests, really none of these were particularly significant. All but one were older short-range missiles that he fired off several times in an attempt, I think, to put a little heat on the U.S. But Kim Jong-un always gives a New Year's speech. This one was really long to his central committee, and Kim Jong-un has basically decided at this point to hunker down. He has not violated the moratorium on long-range missile tests yet, although he says it's really in question. And I think here, Dale, that China is a lot of the wild card.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, China was really concerned about all the weapons tests that Kim Jong-un was doing. China did not want to risk U.S. military confrontation, and I think they told Kim to cool it, and he did. Go forward 2 years, and things have changed a bit. I think China doesn't want to see North Korea re-merge with South Korea and to develop closer ties to the U.S. and other Western nations just yet. So for whatever reason, whether it's Kim Jong-un's own reasons or encouraged by Xi Jinping of China, Kim Jong-un is just not budging so far. We are really in a deep freeze on denuclearization.
Well, no news is good news, I think, in that case.
Yeah, that may be. I mean, he hasn't stepped away from it completely, and he's been quite restrained. You know, the North Koreans are known for that colorful language, and mm-hmm. He has not called President Trump a gangster or anything like that in quite some time. So he's been pretty restrained. He's either waiting to decide if he really wants to take the bait and get the economic development for his people, or if he just wants to hunker down. The experts say right now it looks like he's in hunker down mode. That could change, and we do have the 2020 Olympics coming up in August in Tokyo. North Korea has planned to field some joint teams with South Korea, but that's going to require getting diplomacy with the South back on track. So there may be something coming out of that pre-Olympic diplomacy in the summer of 2020, just as we saw back in the winter of 2018.
Well, it's always interesting, that's for sure. So what's up with China? We get so distracted. There's so many things going on in the world all the time. And it seems like, you can get so easily distracted from the news of that sleeping giant over there in the Far East. So what's going to happen with China, do you think, this year? I mean, the trade agreement, possibly. I guess he's going to be announcing some new trade agreement in the next couple of weeks.
That's right. An agreement has apparently been signed, though we haven't seen the details. But long-term, the major significant move has already happened. And that was the Trump administration's decision, with really a lot of bipartisan support, to push back on China's economic practices. And that is what the tariffs and the trade war is all about. The little phase one deal covers quite a bit of trade, but it leaves over half of the U.S.-China trade still under tariffs. Okay. Now, China has made some important small steps. They've agreed to buy more U.S. agricultural products. They've agreed to other modes of behavior in finance and contracts and things that they hadn't been willing to do in the past. So the key for 2020 is, are they serious? Do they mean it? President Trump says this agreement will be signed. Trump has also talked about possibly visiting China to get round two going. But this is the major reset deal that will determine America's destiny probably more than any other external factor. And that is how we balance our economic and military relationship with China. We know we have to not let them continue to do what they've done in taking advantage of the Western world. The question is, will they live up to any international agreements? And you think even about longer-term issues like climate change treaties.
Mm-hmm.
We need China to agree to any major climate deal and to take real action. If they can't take little steps in trade, then we can forget any other long-term deals, whether it's on nuclear weapons or climate or anything like that. So I think it's a crucial year to see if China is ready to be a more responsible world power and live up to this phase one trade deal with the U.S.
I was just going back over our notes that we sent back and forth, and I didn't realize how much China might have been involved in Iran as well.
Oh, my gosh, yes. It's, you know, mm-hmm. So the nuclear deal, it all kind of broke down over Iran being able to sell oil, which obviously is big for their economy. Mm-hmm. Even though Trump had left the deal quite some time ago, there were waivers. Well, the waivers expired, the crisis began. But China has been going in and buying the oil through the back door. China bought quite a lot of oil, and they've been a great customer with Iran. We also see, North Korea sells boats to Iran. China sells weapons into Iran. So with the back door there of Russia and China, Iran has been, it doesn't matter. China sent a very new, modern, fancy destroyer down to the Gulf of Oman to do these exercises. Mm-hmm. And I think Iran, as of, December 30th or so, was feeling like they were pretty powerful, the real player. And I think that had a lot to do with them being willing to greenlight the embassy attacks in mm-hmm. Baghdad. So, again, I think the Soleimani strike has to make both China and Russia reconsider the extent to which they want to continue to egg on Iran in this conflict.
Wow. Things never seem to calm down. This just keeps expanding and expanding. We've got a couple of minutes left, Dr. Grant. Is there anything that you would like to talk about in the last couple of minutes?
Well, I'd really like to just mention how involved our allies are at this point, too.
Okay.
France and Germany in particular spent a lot of time visiting Iran and trying to negotiate with them over the summer. And the last couple of days has been just a slew of diplomatic phone calls. We've seen the leaders of France and Germany talk to both the Iranians and to the Iraqis. We see Britain very actively involved. Of course, Britain is part of Operation Sentinel, which is the maritime security operation keeping the shipping traffic going in the Persian mm-hmm. Gulf. So, while our allies often prefer to be a little bit on the quiet side, rest assured that there is intense diplomacy going on. Everyone wants to see the situation with Iran de-escalate. And Britain, France, Germany, and the European Union are very actively involved in trying to make that happen. The door is still open for negotiation. And we would like to see Iran at some point come to a reasonable conclusion. The Iran-Iraq War of the 1980s, it took the UN to broker a ceasefire in the end. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's a good sign that our allies are still engaged in this painful diplomatic process, even though the Iranians have been very, very nasty and unhelpful to our allies as well.
Absolutely. I have a good question for you. If our audience wanted to find out more information about you and your organization, where would they go?
Great places to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Rebecca Grant DC, and I post my media pieces and opinion pieces and other research there. And then there's also my website, irisresearch.com.
Okay. This is where you hear it first, folks, here on Veterans Radio with our good friend, Dr. Rebecca Grant. And I want to make sure that everybody knows who you are and that they go there. Give me that your Twitter handle again.
Yes, the Twitter handle. It's Rebecca Grant, D.C.
D.C. Okay. Well, be looking for a request from me because all this information, I don't know how you gather it all together and make sense of it, but I'm glad there is somebody out there that can do that.
Well, thank you. And, of course, what really stands out is the wonderful contributions of our military forces. They're in every place that we talked about. Mm-hmm. They're all around the globe, and they work so hard for our American way of life and our American values. And it's just their contributions are tremendous, especially at a time like this.
They are. And I want to thank you again for being on our program, Rebecca, and a happy new year to you and a great new decade.
Thank you. Happy new year.
Okay. Thank you. All right, folks, another program. We want to make sure we thank our sponsors. That's Legal Help for Veterans, U.S. Wings, our American Legion Post 46, VFW Post 423, and the VVA 310 here in Ann Arbor. I want to remind you that Tuesday night here in the Ann Arbor area, you make sure you get over to the Sidetrack Cafe and Bar over on Ypsilanti at the intersection of Cross and River Street. At 5 o'clock to raise money for the Warriors and Caregivers United. This is a very important organization locally. And until next week, this is Dale Thronberry saying, you are dismissed.